Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to View from the Top Rope. I'm Chad, as always, hanging out in Zeus's lair with my good man, the man who doesn't need hair to look good, Diesel.
I don't need hair to look good, but you know what we do here, Chad?
What do we do here?
We discuss professional wrestling from a higher vantage point.
Hey, look at that. We tag-teamed the opener, if you will.
That wasn't even on purpose.
Nope, not at all. Completely forgot to say that.
I got your back.
Hey, that's good. How's your week been, though, Diesel?
It's been pretty interesting. Watched a lot of wrestling. Watched some Mae Young Classic. All caught up in that.
Yeah, I'm behind on that. I've only seen the first episode, and I feel really bad about it. It's not anything against it. I'm just very busy.
It is very good. So, I mean, you're going to have fun catching up.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to sit down and probably just binge watch them all. I might wait for the championship just to be done as of next Monday, right?
Tuesday. After SmackDown.
After SmackDown. So I might just wait for that, and I'll just binge watch it all.
That'll be worth it. That's how I did it, pretty much.
Yeah. No, it sounds like a lot of fun. So I'm upset I haven't watched it yet, but I do have plans in motion to watch it. So we're going to go right ahead into our favorite time of the week. We give each other our mystery brainbuster of the week. And is it my turn to go first, Diesel, or yours?
I don't remember.
Oh, interesting fact. Would you like to go first, or would you like me then to?
I can go first.
All right, buddy. Well, why don't you hit me with it?
Okay. This one might be a little hard to explain, but I'll do my best here. Okay. I want you to think back in all the time that you've watched wrestling and think of something that doesn't really have to do with wrestling, but wrestling made you like it. Do you kind of understand what I'm getting at?
Yeah. So, like, are you saying that I would like it, like going a certain place because of wrestling? Would that be on an agenda?
It could be anything, really. I mean, you want me to tell you what mine is?
Yeah, why don't you give me an example here?
Okay, this is what brought this question to my head. Well, go back to about 2003. And there was a segment on Raw where Eric Bischoff was looking for Stone Cold, and he went to Texas to find him, and he went to this hick bar, and he was all dressed all nice, like he's from the city, ordering martinis, and everyone else is drinking beer, and he, in his martini, as in a lot of martinis, you have green olives, and he took the green olive out of the martini, and he kind of arrogantly plucked it with his teeth and ate it like all arrogantly and cocky. And so it just so happened that I had green olives in my fridge. And so I'm like, I don't think I have had green olives before this. So I'm like, I'll try it. So I didn't have one of those fancy skewers like for whatever.
Martinis, yeah.
Whatever.
The little swords, up. Yeah.
So I just used a toothpick. Like I was using my brain back then. And so I put a couple on there, and I did the same thing, and I didn't like it very much. I was like, these are weird. But every time we had green olives in my house, I'd think of that, and I'd always do it just because, I don't know, it just stuck with me. It was, I don't know. And so every time I have green olives, I think of that every single time. And I've never told that story before at all. So it's a View from the Top Rope exclusive right here.
Right here. That's a crazy good story.
And so basically, the WWE made me love green olives because they're one of my favorite foods.
Yeah, I was just about to say that as well, that actually Diesel eats more green olives than any other human I've ever seen now. So that's a really good story. That's a really good question. So, all right, I got one.
Lay it on me.
Bret Hart, with the purple shades.
Okay.
That totally, like, I didn't wear, like, I always had glasses. And from that moment on, from when I first saw Bret Hart rocking those sweet sunglasses, I was like, I couldn't do anything with those. Those aren't clip-on available. And from that moment on, I knew I had to get contacts. Contacts had just, like, started to become a thing. I was a young kid. Yeah. So I was like, Mom, I got a contact. She's like, no. And I was like, but I got to wear those sunglasses. So my love of sunglasses totally comes from Bret Hart. And I do think about that because I still would rock a pair of the Bret Hart purple shades, just shiny as all heck.
That was a good question.
Yeah, that was a really good question.
If anyone that's listening has anything like that, you can always tweet us at View from Top Rope on Twitter or You can tweet me at diesel_VFTR.
Wow, you got them both. Nailed it. So it's my turn for the question. My question is not nearly that difficult, but it should lead to some fun topics to talk about. Because my favorite question, which I tried to give you a hint with the shirt I'm wearing, is what is your favorite tag team finishing maneuver?
There's a lot of good ones out there.
I know, and that's why I thought about this. And if clearly you can't see me, but I'm wearing my Edge shirt that I bought off ProWrestlingTees.com. It's the one where he's spearing someone on Abbey Road. It's great.
It is great. Does this have anything to do with them adding a whole bunch of tag team moves in WWE 2K18?
Yeah, I did see that as well, and it made me think about it a little bit. But really what spawned this was me thinking of War Machine. And just all of the sweet moves they do. Their pop-up power slam is one of the coolest things ever. And when they did it to Will Ospreay, I honestly thought he was going to hit the ceiling. They could toss people.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of good ones. I like, right now, one of my favorite ones is, what's the one that the Revival does? Can't think of it right now.
Shatter Machine.
You can't never see him wrestle anymore, so I can't remember. But I like I like Shatter Machine a lot. I mean, 3D is a classic. I mean, there's a couple that the Dudleys do, like the What's Up.
Yeah.
And the reverse 3D where they both do the opposite. And
yep.
It's awesome.
They also had the double powerbomb.
Double powerbomb. And the Shield stole it and did a triple powerbomb.
Yeah, there's a really good.
Yeah, that is a good one too.
But it's three people, so it doesn't count.
I got another one. The Unicorn Stomp.
Yes, that's a good one, and I'll count it, even though there's, because usually one of them stand outside, playing
trombone. But it is a tag team maneuver just because there's a tag team match.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. So what, as I said, you got to pick a favorite, though.
I'd probably go with Shatter Machine.
Shatter Machine, yeah. Going with the current one. I like your style. The new is always better, except in this instance. So when I first started thinking about this, one of the first ones that did pop into my head was the Concerto. Now, I know it's not not a technical wrestling move, but they did it in tandem, and it was always my favorite thing ever. I loved Edge and Christian. They were huge heels and annoying, but they were some of my favorites. I liked them almost as much as I liked the Hardy Boys as a child, and I'm not even kidding you.
I was a dumb kid, and I didn't like any of the heels. Like, if I was watching it back now, I would definitely like Edge and Christian the best, but... Yeah, they were probably my least favorite just because I was a dumb kid.
Yeah, no, I always was a heel lover. I guess that sounds really weird.
A heel supporter.
Heel supporter, that's better. So that was the first one that popped in my head. It's not my choice, though. I also thought of Johnny Gargano's and Tommaso Ciampa's, their double knee and kick.
Ooh, that's a good one, too.
Yeah, it's so awesome, and it looks like it just knocks people the heck out. It's amazing. But the one I am going to go with, you already did talk about, and I think it's the greatest tag team maneuver ever, is the 3D. It is so perfect. You can put them through tables. You can do it so much. It's like an RKO out of nowhere because literally they would hit it like out of nowhere. It was so awesome. And the 3D is by far my favorite tag team finishing maneuver of all time.
And it was sweet when they did it through the table.
Oh, yeah. D-Von, get the table.
Ding, ding, ding.
You hear that, kids? That's the sound of the bell, which means class is in session with Professor Diesel, and it's Pro Wrestling History 101 time.
Take your seats, kids, because we got some fun tidbits.
Tidbits!
Because everything that I'm discussing from here on out in Pro Wrestling History 101 will be referred to as tidbits.
And I will try to remember them in case there is a test at a later date.
Well, you don't have to worry about a test today, so...
Yes!
Or do you? Maybe, maybe not.
Keep me in suspense.
So we're recording this podcast on September 8th. So we are going to be doing the week of September 8th to September 14th.
All right. I'm in.
So we'll start out with September 8th, 1991. And on that day, NWA officially stripped Ric Flair of the World Heavyweight Championship.
Is that because he went to the WWE?
No, he went to the WWE as a result of the contract disputes with Jim Herd. And if you don't know the story, it was Jim Herd wasn't really a wrestling guy, but he was running an NWA/WCW at the time, right when they were kind of merging.
Yeah.
And he wanted Ric Flair to take a significant pay cut, shave off his hair, wear a stud diamond earring, and call himself Spartacus. And he was already the world champion, mind you.
Yeah, actually, I did know that story, and now I feel really dumb for asking that question. But thank you, Professor Diesel, for keeping me alive.
So that was like a couple months before today in 1991. So he sat out a couple months, and then his contract is up. They stripped him of the title or the championship. And the very next day, on September 9th, he walked into WWF with the big gold belt. And it was on their TV, and then eventually they had a cease and desist, so that they couldn't do it anymore. But, I mean, Ric Flair probably would have never been in the WWF in the 90s if it wasn't for Jim Herd.
Yeah, no, definitely. Jim Herd was kind of a dick.
He definitely was. He didn't know what he was doing, but, I mean, Ric Flair found his way back, so.
Yeah, it all comes around.
And when I was doing a little bit of research for this, this is just a little side note. That big gold championship was actually created for Ric Flair.
It was, really?
Yes, it was. Wow. He was champion, and I think there was a new regime in NWA coming in. And so they gave him the new belt, and it was customly created for Ric Flair.
Oh, well, what a fun tidbit.
So there you go. So, well, I'm a fan of continuity.
All right.
And remember a couple weeks ago, actually on the very first Pro Wrestling History 101, I talked about a tag team called Natural Born Thrillers.
Yeah, I do remember that. I tried to answer it for the trivia question or the pop quiz you gave me the one time, and they were wrong. But yep. I do remember this.
Yep, it was Chuck Palumbo and Sean O'Hare.
Yep.
As I said, I'm a fan of continuity, and whether it's a good tidbit or a bad tidbit, it's continuity nonetheless. So, unfortunately, this is a bad tidbit.
Oh.
And on September 8th, 2014... Sean O'Hara was found dead in his house, and it was ruled a suicide. So that's a sad one. But, I mean, we talked about him, so I thought I'd bring it up.
Yeah, no, and he had the coolest gimmick that was never actually used. Remember when he was like, he was like the devil's advocate, or he had those promos where he'd walk out in the all-black suit in the white room.
Yeah, those were like a month. Yeah.
Yeah, those were like the coolest vignettes ever, and they never did anything with that.
I know, that's pretty much when he left... Isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much right after that. I think he was on for probably another couple months, but then his contract expired or they released him.
Well, after that sad news, how about we move to some happy news and celebrate some birthdays?
Birthdays!
So, on September 8th is a former WCW World Heavyweight Champion's birthday.
Ooh.
Some might say he is one of the greatest World Heavyweight Champions of all time. Most would disagree. It is David Arquette's birthday, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, wow.
Turns 46.
You swerved me on that one.
And we got another birthday.
Hey, another birthday.
This guy is hardcore. This guy is Raven.
Raven. What about me? What about Raven?
53 is turning today, actually. So happy birthday, Raven.
Have you ever listened to his podcast?
I have listened to his podcast.
It's crazy. He's crazy, man.
He is funny, though.
He's hilarious.
He tells some good stories, too.
You know what one of my favorite matches is that not a lot of people talk about? It's the triple threat match at, I want to say, WrestleMania.
I think I know what you're talking about.
The hardcore title.
Yeah, and when he almost shut down the entire
show. Yeah, when he's riding around on that golf cart and he's trying to get away from Kane and he's just crashing into things. Still one of my favorite things to think about.
When I was a kid, I went to a house show in Madison, and Raven was hardcore champion at the time, and he wrestled Jerry the King Lawler.
Wow, that's random.
So yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. I don't remember all the matches from that night, but that one sticks in my head because I'm like, Raven versus the King, you won't see that every day.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And for the title, too, I'm sure.
No, it wasn't for the title because the King won. And I remember he left his title at ringside and everyone was chanting, "You forgot your belt."
Well, nobody really wanted the hardcore title at that point anyways. Yeah.
What was it, like 260-some reigns they said a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, it's insane.
So, moving on to September 9th.
September 9th.
Okay, this town is... a really weird one, so I'm going to try not to botch it, but I probably will. It's Mississauga, I don't know, Ontario, Canada.
All right.
Mississauga. I think that's how you say it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. One of you Canadian listeners out there, you tell us how to actually say it. Like, send us a stupid way on Twitter, and then we'll say it right next week. I promise you. If you send it to us, we'll say it right.
You got it. And so, Ontario, Canada in 2000, Rhino defeated Kid Cash for the ECW Television Championship.
Ooh, very nice. I love both of those guys.
And the reason this one is a tidbit tonight is because it was the last time this title changed hands, because a couple months down the road, ECW is no more, and the championship went with it. So Rhino is the very last ECW television champion, and he's also the very last, like, original ECW heavyweight champion.
Really now?
Yes.
Wow, so you had both belts at the very end?
Yes.
Wow. Go at Rhino.
At least I'm pretty sure.
Hey, Professor, I will take your word as gospel.
Okay, well, I'm not Dave Meltzer, but I appreciate it.
Hey, I try.
So, moving on to 2005, at SmackDown in Birmingham, Alabama, Eddie Guerrero defeated John Cena in the infamous parking lot brawl.
Oh, that match.
Yeah, that was a good one. I saw it when they first broadcast it, and I don't know if I've seen it since, so it's kind of fuzzy to me, but I think Chavo Guerrero got involved somehow.
Oh, yeah, there was the lowrider got involved, I'm pretty sure, but this was so long ago. I think I've only seen that match probably
one time. I remember a bunch of the superstars being around the cars and watching
the match. Yeah, they were kind of doing the Hollywood backlot brawl thing over again.
Then I remember it being a pretty violent match, which I like.
Oh, yeah. We know you like your violence.
And I remember there being some blood. I remember some windows breaking. And so I'm assuming we should watch that match, and maybe we can discuss it in length later.
Hey, I like your style. Maybe we'll do a little extra thing for Pro Wrestling History 101, and we'll throw in a match that we both watch, an old one, so we can talk about it at the end. From something that happened during the week.
Well, we could do that. That's just a new thing that we just thought up right here.
Boom, once again off the top of my head.
And that's not all that happened in the SmackDown.
Oh, what else happened?
Brock Lesnar had a match.
Yeah, Undertaker.
It was not Undertaker, but it was one of his biggest rivals of all time.
So The Rock?
No, I swerved you again. It was Stephanie McMahon.
Gotta hate you.
It was Stephanie McMahon. And it went to a draw due to an interference by Kurt Angle. And I vaguely remember Vince McMahon aligning himself with Brock Lesnar. And I think Stephanie was the general manager at the time.
Yeah, and Kurt was, like, in love with her. And that was the weird time. That was before Triple H came back, wasn't it?
No, I think this was after that.
After that? Okay.
I think this was totally different. This was right around the time of the Iron Man match on SmackDown with Kurt Angle.
Oh, okay. So this is when Paul Heyman was running SmackDown.
Yeah, behind the scenes.
Yeah, behind the scenes, I'm saying. The SmackDown 6 and everything he had going on there. Okay, so all right, I know the time frame.
Then. Yeah, so right around the time of the first brand split.
Yeah.
Okay, so then moving on to 2007, and we got a TNA pay-per-view.
Hey.
And I don't like to discuss pay-per-views on here because there's just so much to discuss, all the matches. And so, I mean, we could literally do a whole podcast on Pro Wrestling History 101. So I kind of, like, cut out the pay-per-views, but there's some notable. I'm definitely going to discuss it, and this was a pretty notable one. So
it's a good tidbit, you're saying.
It is a good tidbit.
All right.
It's an interesting one for sure. This one was TNA No Surrender. It took place at the Impact Zone in Orlando, Florida. And it was Kurt Angle. He had all the titles.
Yeah.
So he ended up having to wrestle in three matches because he had to defend all his titles. So in the first match, it was for the tag team titles. His partner was Sting, and you're not going to like this very much. Do you know who beat them?
Oh, who? No, I don't. I don't know.
You're not going to like it.
I'm going to be very upset, aren't I?
Yeah, I think you're going to be pretty upset.
All right, well, just lay it on me.
It was Team Pac-Man.
Are you? Oh, my God, I do remember that. I had wiped that memory from my brain. Because I actually remember watching this. I was stealing it on the internet, and I got so mad I stopped watching the pay-per-view at that point. Oh, my Diesel, I love you, but I had blanked that out from my brain, and now it's back there, and I'm very upset. Very upset. He didn't even wrestle. He did nothing. He couldn't take a hit.
For those who don't know who Team Pac-Man was, it was NFL defensive back, Adam Pac-Man Jones.
He literally couldn't do anything because his NFL contract wouldn't allow him to be touched. It was garbage.
And his tag team partner, Chad's personal favorite, Ron the Truth Killings.
Oh, God, it was so bad. Oh, I blanked that from my memory. I'm very upset right
now. Okay, the next one you're going to be happy with, I think.
All right.
Okay, so the next one, Kurt Angle defended the TNA X Division Championship. And he was defeated once again. This time he was defeated by none other than Jay Lethal.
Hey, that's a good one right there. Was he in his Black Machismo gimmick at that time?
I did not go too deep into it.
Is he into the Ric Flair gimmick at this point? Oh, yep.
It's 2007, so I would say not the Ric Flair.
Yeah, no, he's probably in Black Machismo. I think he was Black Machismo. As I said, I really did turn this pay-per-view off, and I don't think I've ever gone back and watched it.
Okay, so then lastly, he had to defend the World Heavyweight Championship, and he did successfully against Abyss.
Ooh, that was probably a good match. I like Abyss a lot. He's one of the workhorses. He's like a poor man's Kane.
Kind of poor man's Kane mixed with Mick Foley.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. See that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's pretty interesting because it's fun to put the titles on Kurt Angle. Like, the month before, like, he had a match with Samoa Joe for all the titles, and I actually saw this match on YouTube, and I know Kurt Angle, the whole storyline with him and his ex-wife, and they were fighting, and then she was sitting in front row, and she ended up helping Kurt Angle out when everyone thought she was going to be helping Joe out.
But yep, no, I remember that as well. I think I watched it on YouTube as well.
So, yeah, so I thought it was interesting. It was fun to have all the titles on Kurt for a month, and then he had to spread out the titles. I mean, it was a poor decision to put him on Pac-Man Jones and Ron Killings, but I mean, I don't know what number this was for Jay Lethal in the X Division Championship reigns, but
2007, I'm going to guess, this is a guess, I'm going to guess he's at like 4 at that point.
Okay, but I mean, still, this might be the biggest one that he won because he beat Kurt Angle.
Oh, yeah, I think, how many time X Division Champion is him?
I wanted to say 7, but I'm not.
That's what my first inclination was too, was 7. And I have the internet right in front of me, so why don't I just look it up while you give us our next wonderful tidbit, Professor?
Okay, well, we're moving on to September 10th, and we're going all the way back to 1988.
Wow, that's the year after I was born.
That was the year I was born.
Yeah, so we're old.
Yeah, we're getting there. So, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, NWA, United States Tag Team Champions, the Midnight Express, which was Bobby Eaton, and Stan Lane defeated Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard of the Four Horsemen to win the NWA World Tag Team Championship for the first and surprisingly only time.
Really?
Yes, and that win made them the only tag team in NWA history to hold both the United States and World Tag Team Champions simultaneously.
Wow.
And this was also Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard's final match before heading over to the WWF, where they became the Brainbusters.
Yeah.
And were managed by Bobby the Brain Heenan, and he led them to tag team gold over there. So.
Yeah, no, the Brainbusters is one of my favorite tag teams of all time. I love me some Brainbusters action, especially with Bobby the Brain Heenan out on commentary. That's why he was on my top list of commentators.
Mine too. I think it was number 2 on mine. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty confident on that one.
I'm pretty confident.
All right, move into 2007. So this one was Raw. I don't know where it was, but this was arguably the biggest angle in wrestling in 2007. And of course, like all the big angles in the WWE,
Triple H,
they end horribly.
Yeah. All right, what was this
so
one?
So, do you have a guess?
2007, it was on Raw. So, this was when Raw was not good. Is this Katie Vick?
No, that was before 2007.
Yeah, that was. But that was during the brand split as well.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, okay. So, it wasn't that much before. No, I don't have another guess. Just lay it on me.
Well, Vince McMahon announces his illegitimate child is revealed to be Hornswoggle.
Oh, it was supposed to be Mr. Anderson. And then he just kept getting popped for drugs and getting injured. And then he wasn't really injured. He lost his briefcase. It was bad. He was supposed to be the illegitimate son, though, and he would have been launched into the stratosphere.
Oh, yeah, so when all else fails, go with Hornswoggle.
Go with Hornswoggle. He is clearly the best one. And you don't know this, but our good friend Sean's favorite wrestler.
And Tommy the Gun.
Yeah, Tommy the Gun as well, but he's almost Hornswoggle. I mean, he's not that much taller.
Yeah, that is very true. Sorry, Tommy.
Hey, so update, as I said, I had the internet in front of me. Jay Lethal had 6 reigns as the X Division champion.
So we were close.
We were close. We gave him one more than he had. And I mean, I completely agree with that. He deserves more.
Yeah, I agree too. But for the Price is Right, no one.
We would not. We went over.
Okay, so here's a good one. Another Raw on September 10th in 2012 in Montreal, Canada.
Oh.
This Raw was Bret Hart's first appearance on WWE programming since the infamous
Montreal
Screwjob at Survivor Series 1997.
So this is the... Oh, yeah. I remember this episode.
I do, too. I wasn't watching wrestling at the time, but I actually was flipping through the channels, and I stopped and watched the beginning of Raw, and I saw this segment, but this was the only segment I saw on the show, but it was worth it.
Yeah, no, I remember watching this live and getting super jacked up, because this is at the time when I actually watched Raw live, because I could do things like that.
Actually, thinking back, I wasn't flipping through the channels. They had advertisements all week saying Bret Hart was returning to Raw. And being a wrestling fan, I was still a wrestling fan. I just wasn't watching. So, I mean, I had to tune in and actually see it for myself. And then Shawn Michaels coming down to the ring, and then they hugged and made up and everything.
Yeah.
And it was a good moment. So you'd think that would be what made this Raw memorable, right?
Yeah, I would.
Well, that was not the case.
Oh.
Not too long after this segment, Jerry the King Lawler suffered a heart attack.
Yeah, that's what this episode. I knew there was another reason I should remember this episode.
I mean, it's crazy. Like, he totally stole Bret Hart's thunder. It's probably because he made him stick his foot in his mouth a couple years
ago. Yeah, that's what he was doing. So,
totally stole his thunder. I can't believe that was 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. That's much longer than I thought. Another quick update. Sorry, I'm still on this Jay Lethal thing because now I'm on Wikipedia and I'm going to close it after this because it's trying to suck me in. But it was his second reign as X Division champion.
Oh, yeah, that's a fun fact.
Yeah, that's definitely a fun fact. And he didn't hold it very long. He lost it. So he won it on September 9th, clearly. And he lost it on January 21st.
Oh, that's not too short of a reign, though.
And then he won it right back on February 10th.
Well,
it was very odd. All right, I'm off Wikipedia now. So, Professor, yeah. I'm sorry.
Would you like to be my TA?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, give me your notes.
No, you gotta just roll with the punches, Chad. I'm not giving you my notes. Anyways, we're gonna celebrate another birthday here on September 10th.
Birthdays!
This one's a little weird, but I am personally a fan of this guy. He is a former CZW star and current NXT referee.
Oh.
Drake Young.
That is a random one, but happy birthday, Drake Young.
Turns 33.
Nice.
And I don't know, he's the guy who does all the big matches on NXT, and I actually think he's a pretty solid referee.
Yeah, no, he's spry. He makes things look intense. I love when he counts the final three count. It looks really, yeah.
And I don't remember what year it was, but before he came over to NXT, he was in the semifinals of Tournament of Death.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I have never seen that match, but I heard that he was pretty crazy in CZW. Okay, moving on to September 11th.
September 11th, a day that's very sad in our history, but we're just talking about pro wrestling right now.
Yes, there might be some sad things, but it doesn't have to do with any of the terror attacks.
Yeah, no, it's a sad day.
I mean, it's more of an interesting sad thing, but I'll get to that in a minute. The first thing I got to talk about is from 1995, and it was the first time Monday Night Raw and Monday Nitro aired opposite of each other.
Oh, so they aired in the same time slot, you're saying?
Yeah, it was the second episode of Nitro because the week before was Labor Day and they didn't have a Raw that week. So. Yeah,
so they just were like, we're not going to have one. So that's the first time when the Monday Night Wars really started, huh?
Yep, basically. I think I don't know. Monday Night Raw was taped and Nitro was live. Yep. And every now and then Monday Night Raw would be live, but not this one, and I think that I know that WCW won the ratings war that week, but it was like a 2.3. It was really low.
Yeah, that's because they were live, so everyone got really excited about it. It was the first time they'd done something like
and
that.
They went up way higher just a few years later, so it was the start of basically professional wrestling as we know it today.
Yeah.
Sports entertainment, basically.
Sports entertainment at the beginning, it was the dawn of the golden age. Yeah, wait, do they call that one the platinum age? What do they call that one? Because they say the golden age of wrestling is the Hulk Hogan time.
Just the attitude era, man.
I guess it's just the attitude era. All right, Professor, what's our next tidbit?
In 2011, Jeff Hardy was arrested on charges of trafficking prescription pills and possessing anabolic steroids.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was kind of bad. They searched his house and they found over 200 Vicodin pills, 180 Soma prescription pills, 550 milliliters of anabolic steroids, and a residual amount of powder cocaine and various drug paraphernalia.
Good God. That is a lot.
It sounds like he was getting ready to have a party.
Yeah. No, that's a lot. And I don't mean to switch subjects real quick, but on Jeff Hardy, have you seen his match when he has it with Sting? I think it's that same year. I think it's 2011, actually.
Yes, I did see that match. I don't think it was 2011 just because of the next part of the fact.
Oh, okay.
But yes, I did see that match, and Eric Bischoff had to come out and call it off.
It was so bad. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen.
He basically kicked out, put Errol Hebner in count of the three anyways, because Eric Bischoff was irate.
Yep. He didn't even know what was going on. If you haven't seen it, look it up. It's on YouTube. Sting versus Jeff Hardy for the title in TNA when Jeff Hardy is high out of his mind on pills and whatever else. He can't even do his own entrance.
And I'm not sure, but I think Jeff Hardy was supposed to go over that night, too.
Yeah, he was definitely supposed to take the title from Sting.
At Bound for Glory, their biggest pay-per-view of the year, too, was their WrestleMania. He had a problem, and I'm glad that he's clean now, for as far as I know.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's in the WWE, and they have a rigorous drug testing now.
So then his arrest came just 2 weeks after he left the WWE to heal from nagging injuries. Hardy was placed in a Moore County Detention Center on a $125,000 bond and pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 10 days in prison, 30 months of probation, and was fined $100,000.
Jeez.
Yeah. Well, that's behind him now.
Yeah, he's cleaned himself up, apparently. He rendered himself obsolete, and he became clean.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably what that was mostly about.
Probably.
But, I don't know, maybe we can ask Matt Hardy someday.
Yeah, hopefully.
So, 2013, WWE issues a press release stating that longtime announcer Jim Ross has retired from the company effective immediately to focus on personal business endeavors.
Oh, so this is basically when they fired him, huh?
Yep, and we know how that all turned out because he's back.
He's back with the WWE, so everything comes around.
Well, do you know what was that tipped it, made him fire him?
No, you tell me, Professor Diesel.
At SummerSlam... In 2013, they had the video game launch, and they had the panel with all the wrestlers, and JR hosted it, and Ric Flair was there, and it was just after he lost his son, and he was drunk, and JR couldn't control him, and they just looked at it as being a negative for JR, and they canned him.
Wow, that's really sad for how that went down.
Yeah, and I guess him and Flair were... I guess he was mad at Flair for a little while, but I guess they're good now, so.
They reconciled.
Yeah.
Ric Flair still tapping out death.
Yep, he kicked out.
He kicked out.
He ain't dead yet, mother effers. Okay, well, got another birthday.
Birthday!
And this man's name is Paul Heyman.
Wow, nice. We were talking about Paul Heyman with the SmackDown 6 and everything. So I'm glad it's his birthday in September.
And he's turning 52.
Really? He's only 52?
That's what they said.
Wow. My research. I thought he would be higher in his 50s than that.
And fun fact, I saw on Twitter, someone asked a question. I can't remember who it was, so I apologize for that. But they asked if you could, if Paul Heyman put together the Dangerous Alliance today, who would you select as the people that would be on there? and it was 5 males and 1 female. And I answered with KO, Samoa Joe, Authors of Pain, Drew McIntyre, and Asuka.
Wow. That was a really good – I remember seeing this answer on Twitter.
And I think that team would be unstoppable. How could you beat them?
You literally could not beat them. That would be the greatest team of all time.
I mean, the Dangerous Alliance, that would be the perfect name for them because they would be dangerous. So, but anyway, so we're going to move on to September 12th in 2006. Something that was thought to never, ever be possible was finally possible. ECW made its debut in Madison Square Garden. Obviously, it was the WWE version, but regardless, it was ECW in Madison Square Garden, and in the show's main event, it was Big Show, who defeated Sabu in an Extreme Rules match to retain the ECW Championship.
Wow.
And that's all I got for September 12th. So
September 12th is done.
So moving on to the 13th.
Lucky number 13.
Yeah, if you want to go with that. This one is a couple days after 9/11. So back up until like last year, a little over a year ago, SmackDown was always taped on Tuesdays and aired on Thursday or Friday.
Yep.
And so 9/11 happened on a Tuesday, so they postponed the show. And then that Thursday, when SmackDown was supposed to air, they decided to do a live SmackDown. And it was actually the first live televised sporting event in the United States since the attacks happened.
I did know that, and that's a crazy fact. And the WWE always does that. They are always on top of these things, and they're like, you know, people need to see the show. It'll make them feel better.
And I remember it very well with everyone standing on the stage, Vince McMahon in front. He gave that speech about how we're going to come together and everything. And then Lillian Garcia singing a very, like, emotional national anthem. And she always sings the national anthem real well. But that one was her best, definitely. I mean, in the moment, like.
Oh, it was perfect. I remember that very vividly as well. It was one of the best things I've ever seen on SmackDown. Is the entire roster standing out there. Vince McMahon gives his speech. And then Lillian Garcia sings the national anthem. It and was then amazing. Yeah,
throughout the rest of the episode, the superstars gave a few words about the tragedy and try to lift people's spirits, and it was a good thing. And I remember just a couple nights after that, Saturday Night Live went live, and they were one of the first people to go live. And I mean, it started – basically, this started everything up again.
Going back to normal.
Yep, we're trying to at best. But so we're moving to 2004. And this one made my tidbits sheet here because it's actually kind of hysterical. And a man named Mike Bucci, who made his WWE debut as Simon Dean.
Oh!
Remember Simon Dean?
Yes, I do remember Simon Dean.
Yes, on this night, his debut was a commercial for a fitness product known as the Simon System. The vignette was so well done, people legitimately called the number to order it. The funny part is that the number that they put on the screen was the number to WWE headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut. So
everyone was calling the WWE headquarters?
Yep. So I mean, I thought that was funny, so I thought that deserved to be on the list.
That is hilarious.
And I have one more here, and it's the only one I got for September 14th.
September 14th.
And it was 1999. SmackDown in Las Vegas, Nevada, not unlike this week in SmackDown.
Hey, look at that.
Which is could be a coincidence. I don't know.
I don't know.
So, anyways, on this SmackDown, WWF Chairman Vince McMahon defeats Triple H to win the WWF Championship. So, at the time, he was 54 years old, which made him the oldest WWF champion in history, I think, still stands
today.
And on the Raw, after that SmackDown, he vacated the title and Triple H won it not too long after that.
Yep. But I remember all of this stupidity.
But, I mean, thinking about this right now, that since SmackDown is in Las Vegas and Mr. McMahon's supposed to be on SmackDown, and this is almost 18 years to the day this happening, could he be taking the title off of Jinder on Tuesday night.
Oh my gosh, that would be the craziest thing ever. Vince McMahon awesome. Over Jinder.
That's why he's been booking him this way. So when he comes out,
yeah,
he's going to be the hero, the American hero, to take the title off
of Jinder. Oh, that would be absolutely amazing.
Ding, ding, ding. Oh, there's the bell. That means class is dismissed.
Everybody go get your snacks, maybe some cookies. I really think that was a good idea from last time we did this. So everyone get your snacks.
Yeah, and maybe enjoy an after-school special.
Hey, they made some videos about some of the things that are going on. Maybe a green cookie. Ayo.
Oh, yeah, pistachio.
Pistachio cookie. So we've decided we're once again going to review Raw and SmackDown this week. I'm going to try and sneak 205 Live in there. We'll see what happens. But we're going to roll right into Raw. Raw was good this week. I mean, Raw's been good for like the past probably month. I've enjoyed Raw pretty much every single Monday for, well, actually Tuesday because I watched it on Tuesdays. But I've enjoyed Raw for at least the past month.
Well, for me, it's been hit or miss, but I do agree this episode was really good and it's been the best one since SummerSlam, in my opinion.
Oh, no, this was definitely the best one for sure. So it started out with actually a match, which really was awesome.
Exactly. When I heard John Cena's music, I'm like, oh, John Cena promo.
Yep.
But when you heard Jason Jordan's music, did you sit there and go to yourself, who's this coming out?
Yeah.
I did. I didn't know who it was.
I only knew about it because, as I said, I watched it on Tuesday. So I must have got some kind of Twitter update or something, which said Jason Jordan faced John Cena. But otherwise, I would have had no idea.
Yeah, I was real confused.
Yeah, super confused. But it was a really good match, back and forth. Jason Jordan looked good. He was, you know, doing the amateur wrestling style the whole time. So, it's a good match.
Yeah, they kind of seem like they kind of took away his push, but they're kind of giving him another, like a little push, but kind of like doing what they were doing with Chad Gable on SmackDown and letting it be a little more organic.
Yeah, it's like an ancillary push.
His wrestling to like get him over instead of making him be Kurt Angle's son all the time.
You know? Yeah, no. I mean, he still is Kurt Angle's son, but now, yeah, you're right.
They're not shoving it down your throat.
Exactly, and that's why it's better. So John Cena clearly won that match. Right after that, Roman Reigns came out to confront John Cena again, which have been some of the best promos that the WWE has had since probably Miz ripping on Daniel Bryan on Talking Smack was probably one of my favorite promos of all time.
Yeah, those are good. But these ones I am very interested in. It makes me very excited for this match in a couple weeks at No Mercy. And I don't know if the big dog comment about breaking his zipper was planned or not planned. I heard a little theory that maybe it wasn't like didn't tell John Cena right before Roman Reigns came out. Vince McMahon just goes, hey, pull down your zipper. John Cena will notice that and he'll say something. If he says something, you give him this line. I heard a little theory about that, so I don't know if that's true or not. But, I mean, these promos are awesome.
No, and apparently John Cena has been writing all these promos. And so John Cena might be the greatest promo person in the WWE ever.
And it continued on Twitter yesterday as well. And,
yeah.
And John Cena won that war as well.
Yeah, no, John Cena is winning all of these wars. But once again, he's writing it, so...
Yeah, we'll see who wins in the end.
Oh, we will do the picks, and I don't know who I'm going with in this match. This is a hard one to decide. As John Cena has already said, he does have that golden shovel, but it's Roman Reigns. It's Roman Reigns versus John Cena.
As of right now, I know who I'm going with, but that doesn't mean it's not going to change. So we'll see. We got a couple weeks. I still can think about it for a little while.
Yeah, definitely. So the next match was not on the Hulu version unless I slept through it, and it was... The Bar defeating Heath Slater and Rhino.
It was not on the Hulu version, but watching like WTF moments and ups and downs from What Culture, they mentioned this match, and I don't know. I don't really remember much. I don't think they liked it very much.
Yeah, it was probably a squash match. I mean, Heath Slater and Rhino are barely used on Raw, so I'm sure it was a squash match by The Bar.
I think Dean and Seth were on commentary, though, too. I heard they were good on commentary, so...
Oh, that's an interesting fact, but we didn't get to see it, so I can't talk about it. Yeah. The next match on the card was the Intercontinental Championship match between The Miz and Jeff Hardy, and The Miz went over, clearly the right guy to go over, and this was a solid match.
I mean, he technically went over clean. I mean, yeah. He can be like, oh, well, Maurice squeezed his hand, but I mean,
Yeah, no, he went over clean. Like, Maurice didn't really interfere. She didn't push Jeff Hardy off or anything. It was like a 90% clean win.
Do you think she was supposed to pull him out of the ring and she just didn't, just squeeze his hand, or I don't know.
I don't know. It did look weird, but I also kind of liked it because the commentary team actually put it over correctly. So I was cool with it.
After totally botching when everyone got thrown out, that now it's one-on-one. There's no outside distractions while they're focusing on Maurice on the outside of the ring. And it's like Booker T and Michael Cole were doing it.
Corey Graves was there to be going, you guys are idiots.
It's usually what he's there for.
Exactly. So, as I said, solid match. Nothing super amazing, but it was solid. The next match, once again, was not on the Hulu version, which makes me upset. Because it was a cruiserweight match, and I want to see these matches, and I could clearly go on WWE.com and watch them. But I don't, because they pretty much show them on 205 Live, which I watch every week. But this match was a six-man tag. It had Enzo Amore, Cedric Alexander, Grand Metalik, defeating Noam Dar, Tony Nese, and Drew Gulak. And I do know that Tony Nese took the loss in this match.
Yeah, it was a rematch from the previous week's 205 Live, so... And it was the same result, too, so it could have been the same exact match for all you know.
For all we know, it was the exact same match. The next thing on the card was Bray Wyatt challenged Finn Balor to a match at WWE No Mercy. Once again, I want to care about this. I really, really do. But they're not giving me anything to care about.
Yeah, I mean, Finn Balor in his leather jacket, he looks cool. And he said too sweet, which I was kind of marked out for. But
Bullet Club.
Balor Club.
Bullet Club.
No, this is WWE. They're not going to use
it. I don't care.
Maybe someday. But, yeah, this, I don't get it. I don't know why Bray Wyatt lives on the Titantron. I mean,
it honestly doesn't make any sense.
Why is it scary that he's talking to you from the Titantron? Wouldn't it be more scary if he's face-to-face?
Yeah, he's creepy as hell in person.
I don't get it,
and I want to get it.
And you know the match is going to be awesome.
The match is going to be good again.
And you know what else I don't get? He wants to face Finn Balor as the man Finn Balor, not the demon Finn Balor, because he wants to see if he can beat the man Finn Balor. But the week before SummerSlam, he faced him one-on-one, and I'm pretty sure he won clean.
He won clean in that match.
So, I mean, why does he want to face the man Finn Balor so he can lose and lose another feud?
Yeah, I don't understand. I really hate it, and I love Bray Wyatt and Finn Balor, but I hate it.
Yeah, hopefully Finn Balor can move on from this after this and have a good feud, but I don't know where they're going to go with Bray Wyatt.
I don't either, and it's really upsetting they removed him off SmackDown. I think that was the problem right there.
And when he first got moved to Raw, he was kind of fresh. They were kind of pushing him a little bit, and then now he's super stale.
Oh, so stale. So the next match on the card was another tag match, but this was for Nia and Emma. If they defeated Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks in this tag match, they got added to the match at No Mercy. Clearly they won, because we all watched it already. And this, once again, I enjoyed a lot of parts of this match. And I know Diesel wants to talk about one in particular.
Well, I want to talk about the backstage segment with Nia coming up to Kurt Angle after they showed what happened last week with Nia taking out Alexa after her winning the women's title and asking Kurt Angle how Sasha Banks is in the title match and not her. And Kurt Angle says, well, we don't just give things away here. You got to earn them and blah, blah, blah. And you got to wait your turn. And then he just gives her a number one contenders match with Emma because she walked in and wanted one too because...
And then Nia dropped. She was going to kill Emma pretty much. That's because last time it was give Emma CPR and this time she was like, I'm going to murder you.
Yep. But the match in itself, I really liked the match. I mean, a few months ago, I was really down on Nia. I thought she was kind of boring, but I think she's showing a lot more character right now, and she's getting better in the ring, not as fast as Braun Strowman, and I think they kind of were trying to hope that she would, but she's not. But she's getting there, and I really liked the match, especially at the end when Nia is dominating the entire match. She's going for her leg drop on Sasha Banks. When she goes to hit the ropes, Emma tags herself in. And after she hits the leg drop, Emma comes in and gets the pin.
She dived in and stole the pinfall from her. And I love Nia's face. You're 100% right. She is improving. She's not improving as fast as, you know, they probably hoped she would. But you're right. She is improving every week. And, the face she made at Emma when she snuck in, I thought she was going to rip her off and lose the match. Like, you could see the character development on her face thinking, I want to destroy this girl right now, but I know if we win anyways, I get a title shot.
Yeah, like, I can't believe she just did that.
Exactly. Like, it was perfect.
And it makes perfect sense to do this Fatal 4-Way and put Emma in there, because obviously she's going to be taking the pin whoever wins at No Mercy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's kind of also nice that Emma's in this match, because when was the last time she had a pay-per-view match?
Yeah, no, and she is one of the best female workers. Like, as she said, she started the Divas Revolution. It's not true.
I like Emma a lot.
I like Emma a lot.
There was a spot in this match, I think this is what you were referring to before, was when, I don't know, I don't remember the exact configuration in the ring. I know it was Nia and Alexa. And Nia, like, basically roared at Alexa, and Alexa screamed back at her in terror. And, like, the scream and the face that Alexa made, and they had the perfect camera angle for it, it made me laugh. I was almost rolling on the floor laughing.
Yep, that's exactly what I knew I thought you would talk about.
I almost forgot about it for a second, but discussing the match, and then it all came back to me.
Yeah, it floods back to your memory. The next match was another good match. This was the Raw Tag Team Champions, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, two parts of the former Shield, defeating The Club, Luke Gallows, and Karl Anderson.
That one wasn't on the Hulu version.
Oh, I must have watched this one on YouTube.
Yeah, I didn't see this one.
It wasn't a long match or anything, but it was solid.
Yeah, well, I don't know what they're doing with The Club. They win one week, they lose the next week. They don't have, like, they have the nerds gimmick going, but, I mean, are they faces? Are they heels? Are they even real?
They're just waiting for Balor Club. That's all they're waiting for.
It's never going to happen. They're going to keep teasing it, and they're going to wait for the perfect opportunity, and it's probably already past them.
No, the perfect opportunity is not past them yet, because Finn Balor is still hyper over, and the minute that The Club would team up with him, just remember how over AJ Styles and The Club were.
True. I kind of hope if they do it, it spans across SmackDown and Raw.
Yeah, I hope it's a giant faction where they just start destroying people. And I know this is Ollie Davis from WrestleTalk's theory as well. But I've also said that forever, that they need factions because there's so many wrestlers and it would make so much more sense. Then you could have these squash matches that quasi mean something.
Yeah, I like having factions. I don't have a problem with it at all. I like to think that if they did have, like, the Balor Club on Raw and SmackDown, eventually down the line they get to, like, a Survivor Series and they feud with each other and it'd be Balor Club versus Balor Club, or, like, AJ Styles changes the name to something else or something. I don't know.
So it'd be basically NWO versus NWO Wolfpack?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, all right with that.
I mean, it's a good callback. They haven't done that in a while. So
yeah, that'd be really awesome, actually. I hadn't thought of that at all.
Think about, like, all these kids that don't even know about the NWO, so it'd be all new to them, too. And,
exactly.
And then a couple years down the road, they'll have a podcast, and they can be talking about it like we are right now.
Yeah, when they do it for the third time, and they just, you know, bring it back again.
Exactly.
So then we move on to the main event of Raw, which was the steel cage match between Braun Strowman and The Big Show. And this match was nuts.
It was nuts, and it was set up very well.
I was going to say, we got to talk about all of the backstage promos before that. We started with Braun Strowman saying he was going to destroy him.
And he was going to put Big Show out to pasture.
Yep, take him out. Then we went to Big Show next.
Yep, and he cut, like, one of the best babyface promos he's ever cut. It was almost like a classic, like, 90s, 80s babyface promo where it almost felt like he was the underdog. I mean, even though he was kind of the bigger guy.
Yeah, no, he definitely made himself seem like the underdog. It seemed like a Hulk Hogan promo from the 80s.
The whole time he knew he wasn't going to win.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was believable. Like, he believed it in himself. And, I mean, I've always liked the Big Show. I mean, he's turned heel and face way too many times, but
he cries a lot.
Yeah, he's a pretty funny guy. He has some very memorable moments, I'll say that.
So, you know, one of the weirdest things ever, so I'm just going off top for a second, the Money in the Bank 2011, one of my favorite pay-per-views of all time.
The one with the giant ladder.
Yeah. Do you know what is the poster for that?
Probably do. I just can't think of it off the top of my head.
Well, it clearly involves Big Show, and it also involves somebody else we already talked about. It's Big Show and Hornswoggle, and they're finding the briefcase in, like, a pot of gold, and it's the most ridiculous thing ever. And it drives me crazy every time I go back to rewatch the CM Punk versus John Cena match on that pay-per-view.
Yep, and it's the Leprechaun Hornswoggle, yep. So it's not the 3MB nope. Hornswoggle.
It's the Leprechaun, and it's really, really bad. It's so ridiculous. It's such a good pay-per-view, and they have the most ridiculous poster.
I think it's pretty funny. I like it.
I'm glad you do. So then clearly, and the final promo we had was from the referee.
John Cone,
who was talking about the fact the ring broke last time. And just, this was probably the best promo of all three of them.
I agree. I mean, they should do this more with referees. And I mean, their characters too, they should get involved. Maybe not like involved in the match. They should still be referees, but they should interview them every now and then. And so you ask them like, why you made this decision? Like, especially when it's something controversial, and I really enjoyed this. I really want to do it more.
Yeah, I could completely agree. And most referees are wrestlers who couldn't make it as wrestlers, so they moved to being a referee. So some of them got to have promo skills. So I would definitely, yeah, start putting the mic in front of them. It's good stuff, especially with the controversial calls. Once again, good call, Diesel.
I know. Well, I kind of stole that from Wrestle Ramble, but
what are you going
to
do?
Borrow it from them. Maybe one day they'll listen to us and they can borrow something from us.
Yeah, we can always hope. So the match itself was a great match. Big Show flying off the top rope with a giant elbow drop.
The best part about that was the Booker T selling it about how he used to use that as his finisher when he was the Giant, when he came up in 95 in WCW. And he hasn't done it since. And the whole time you're like, are these ropes going to break? Are they going to hold him?
I couldn't believe that everything held.
And he got a good jump, and he landed it. He looked like Randy Savage, a giant Randy Savage.
No, it was an amazing elbow drop. The whole match itself was just so over the top that it had me completely engrossed. I could not look away from the screen.
I know. I mean, I can see why Vince McMahon likes big, sweaty men. I mean,
Vince McMahon likes big, sweaty men. Like,
put them in a cage where they can't go anywhere, so just throwing each other into the cage, and it was a hard-hitting match. He had an early knockout punch from Big Show.
Yeah, he kicked out of the WMD, which they don't call it that anymore.
I know, I preferred that name as well.
Yeah, the weapon of mass destruction.
Big Show had that choke slam where Braun Strowman jumped real high.
Yeah.
It was a good one, and the sound when he landed on the mat.
Oh, yeah.
It was just, And yeah, then Braun Strowman eventually hit the power slam.
No, he hit the superplex for the win.
No, he hit the superplex and then the power slam.
Oh, did he hit the power slam?
Yeah, I forgot about the superplex. But yeah, he finished with the power slam.
Oh, I didn't think he hit I thought you just pinned him after the superplex, but no, that's fine.
No, he hit the power slam. Remember, he picked him up like he was nothing.
Oh, yeah, never mind. And all right, it's back to me now.
Then he got the count, and then he was about to walk out.
And then he put him through the cage. He came back in there and just demolished him.
Power slammed him through the cage.
Yeah, old school style. That reminded me completely of WWE Attitude Era stuff. Like, that was such an Attitude Era spot.
And as King Ross said on WTF Moments, he came in through the cage and he went out through the cage. I would not be surprised if this was his last match. I kind of felt that it might have been during that promo.
It seemed like it a little bit.
And, I mean, what a better person to, like take him out, you know?
Put him over. Yeah, what a better person to put over than Braun Strowman right now, who is one of the most improved wrestlers in the entire world.
Another giant passing the torch. I mean, it was an honor for Braun Strowman. He actually tweeted about it. And you see the tweet that Kevin Owens had with the Big Show shirt?
No, I didn't.
He said that that was one shirt he bought when he was a kid and went out of his way to make sure that he's kept forever.
Oh, man. Kevin Owens is the best.
And then he had a picture on Twitter and he was holding it up with a huge, like, grin on his face. Yeah. It was a good one.
Oh, man. Kevin Owens is definitely the best.
That he is, Chad, my boy. That he is. So, we're going to talk a little SmackDown now?
Well, of course. I mean, we just talked about Kevin Owens for a second, so you might as well roll right into SmackDown.
Natural transition.
So SmackDown opened with the man, Kevin Owens.
Technically opened with promos with Jinder and Randy Orton.
That's true. They did those behind-the-scenes promos again.
It wasn't Jinder. It was Shinsuke.
Shinsuke and Randy. They've been doing that on SmackDown to make it feel like big fights.
And Randy Orton couldn't have looked any more or less interested.
No, he looked It's just so weird. Randy Orton doesn't care anymore. He wants to go to Raw. Did you read that report?
Yeah, he doesn't like the SmackDown writers, and he wants to turn heel.
Yeah, he wants to go back to Raw with Vince McMahon. He likes working with Vince McMahon, and that's it.
And he's a better heel, so that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm totally in for him being a heel. So, but beyond that, SmackDown then opened with Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens having a very heated promo segment
technically
together.
Okay. It opened with Carmella because it was supposed to be Carmella versus Natty for just a match. It wasn't the women's title. It wasn't on the line.
Yeah.
But so Carmella came out with James Ellsworth, and then James Ellsworth starts talking on the mic, and then Kevin Owens' music hits, and he comes out and tries to steal the ref shirt again because he's going to be the referee. And then Shane McMahon comes out. And now you can go.
No, that's it's 100% true. I'm just reading the quick hits, man. So you are here to tell me exactly what happened.
I understand. That's just a better way to
have
some backstory.
Professor.
It makes more sense why Shane McMahon came on while they're doing this promo.
No, Professor. I always will cede to your thoughts because you're the professor, even not when we're in class. So clearly, we had this wonderful promo segment. And it concluded with Shane McMahon. Kevin Owens insulted his children again. He said it twice. Shane McMahon said, don't say it again. Kevin Owens did. And then he punched the crap out of him.
Yeah, this is basically SmackDown's version of the John Cena Roman Reigns shoot.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And Kevin Owens looks so just smiley. He's the greatest heel on SmackDown.
Yeah, look, Daddy, I need your attention.
Yeah. Look. Oh, you jump off huge things? You fall out of helicopters? Oh, it was so awesome. Kevin Owens is the best. I love Kevin Owens.
And it's real funny. So then Shane McMahon started with his punches to the face and knocked him out of the ring and then eventually knocked him over the announce table.
Yeah, into the Corey Graves was
Nice welcome for Corey Graves.
Yep, yeah, right into Corey Graves.
I'm sure he didn't mind. He's a KO fan.
Yep. Oh, 100%. So clearly great promo segment, which we'll talk about a little more later because there's a lot more that happens in the show.
It was a thread throughout the entire show.
Exactly. So then we did get the Natalya defeating Carmella match that you were just talking about. And Natty went over clean. The big thing in the match is James Ellsworth threw the briefcase in and like tried to cash in for Carmella, and she freaked out, and she didn't cash
in. He didn't try to cash in. He was getting up on the apron, and he dropped it, and the referee was...
No, he was yelling that he wanted to cash it in for her.
No, he wasn't. You should rewatch it. He did not. He was getting up, and he fumbled the case, and it fell into the ring, and the referee picked it up, and that's when Carmella freaked out. And but it doesn't matter anyways. He can't cash it in, so the referee can't take it from him. So that was kind of stupid, I thought. But then also, why didn't she cash in? She already had Natalya laying flat on her back. She should have cashed in right there and won the women's title.
Yeah. That's a later argument that's going to happen. They are going to hold it. I think because of the Baron Corbin thing, they're going to let the money. She's going to be more of Dolph Ziggler. She's going to hold that briefcase for forever. And then randomly on one SmackDown, it's just going to happen.
I think so.
Yeah, I really do at this point. Because I thought it was going to happen early, but then they did with Baron Corbin. So at this point, I think they're now going to do that with her.
And then, so then when James Ellsworth almost cashed in for her, distracted Carmella, and Natalya rolled her up and
got the win.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah, and that was how the match ended. And then Carmella screamed at James Ellsworth, said she was done with him, that they wouldn't, she didn't need his no-chinned face anymore.
She said a lot of harsh things, that's
a
for sure.
A lot of harsh things. It was really, really harsh.
It was a little uncomfortable.
It hurt my soul a little bit. I felt bad for James Ellsworth.
I did too, but there's more of that to come.
Yeah, we come a little bit later on that one. So the next part of the show is actually one of my favorite parts of the show. I'm not going to lie to you. And this was Dolph Ziggler re-debuting on SmackDown Live, doing all people's entrances. He did John Cena. He did Macho Man.
Macho Man, yep.
And then he did Naomi's entrance. And they were hilarious. And his promo was the most impassioned I've heard him since he was feuding with The Miz for his career.
Well, before I comment on that, when he was the Macho Man, he came out with lady. And do you know who she was?
I do not know who she was.
She was Eugene's ex-wife.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, where'd you get that one, Professor?
Wrestle Ramble.
Nah, those smart guys at Wrestle Ramble. We keep talking about you. Please, just give us a like.
Yeah, anything. I mean, retweet here and there, that'd be nice. So, where were we on? Oh, the gimmicks. So, I don't know. I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was pretty entertaining. I don't think that you should keep doing this. I think 1 week was enough. I think that because it's kind of a progression from what he did the week before, how he said, I'm going to debut it the next week. So he kind of took a step forward. I think next week, hopefully, he takes another step forward. It doesn't like come out as other people.
So here's how I think it's going to go. I think he's going to do one more week of imitating gimmicks because he's going to do – I think he's got to do The Undertaker or Kane, one of the two. He's got to do one of those classic ones. He can't do Ric Flair because clearly Ric Flair is sick, or else I guarantee instead of Macho Man, it would have been Ric Flair's entrance.
Or Hulk Hogan.
And then I also want to see him do like the Finn Balor entrance for one more new school one because it'd be hilarious. But, and then after that, I think he's going to start doing no music. He's going to go just completely come out, blank screen. He's just going to walk out, and he's going to be the amateur wrestler. And him, Chad Gable, and Shelton Benjamin are going to form the faction that they talked about so long ago.
Varsity Club?
The Varsity Club, with being all, and they're just going to go, you know what? Yeah, we're going to rule this place.
That wouldn't be so bad. Do you know who Ziggler is supposed to be feuding with?
I do not.
Rumors have it that it's supposed to be Bobby Roode.
Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. So Dolph Ziggler is clearly the gatekeeper of SmackDown Live.
Pretty much.
Yep. He's the one you get to go over to increase your standing in the show. So the next match was a little bit of a surprise. We had Aiden English versus Sami Zayn, and Aiden English went over.
In like 2 minutes.
Yeah, it was a squash match almost.
Well, it was another roll-up. I think it was actually the third roll-up of the night.
Yeah.
Which, I mean...
No, it could only be the second. We only had two matches.
Okay, then I think there's a roll-up later. I think there was a total of three roll-ups. Or maybe I was thinking 205 Live.
Yep, you were.
So, but still, technically, the third roll or three roll-ups in one night.
Yeah.
And they had a roll-up on Raw.
Lots of roll-ups. They're overdoing the roll-up.
I agree. I like the roll-up, but yeah, they're
overdoing it. But it's a fun spot. Like, I mean, I love the quick cover every once in a while and to steal a win, but yeah, they're overdoing it.
I mean, I think people are freaking out about this too much about Sami Zayn losing. I mean, I think they're trying to build him to be the underdog again. So, I mean, he can't win
all the time. He was a loser in NXT.
Exactly. I think that...
Like, before he got the title, like, when he was feuding with Neville, he was a loser. He was the one who couldn't win at the big spot.
And when he won, that moment was awesome.
Like, it was huge.
It was the best moment of his WWE career, for sure.
Oh, 100%.
But, I don't know. What I really liked from this was... I like Aiden English. I like his gimmick right now. And after the match, he grabbed the microphone and was going to start singing again. Sami Zayn, uncharacteristically, came out of the ring and chased him away, and while he was running, Aiden English goes, "Oh no, please don't!"
It was absolutely hilarious. I do love this singing. What is he? The Maestro of Malice.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Maestro of Malice. I enjoy everything about it, and he's doing that mic check finisher that we already talked about before. But he still haven't looked up if that was his original finisher.
I remember Corey Graves' nickname that I couldn't remember when we did the list last week.
Yeah?
It's the Savior of Misbehavior.
There you go. That's a good one.
I like that one a lot, actually.
So we'll just move on to the next segment. This segment started – it actually started before the match, I'm pretty sure, with Daniel Bryan taking a phone call. He didn't say he was on the other line, but he said he had to make a decision around Shane McMahon, and he was supposed to make it in the ring. And then we have the culmination of that, with Daniel Bryan coming to the ring, calling Shane McMahon out, Shane McMahon apologizing and everything, but Daniel Bryan suspends Shane McMahon indefinitely.
Yeah, from orders from Mr. McMahon himself.
Yep.
And you know what was weird to me about this segment? They both came out to no music.
Yeah.
And in this day and age in the WWE, they don't do that. It was really weird to me. I was wondering, because Daniel Bryan, maybe they didn't want to have a huge pop. I mean, because it's supposed to kind of be a serious situation. And I was also kind of wondering, maybe that Vince McMahon was going to come out because they wanted to save the big pop for him.
Yeah.
But then he didn't come out, and so I was kind of confused why there was no music.
I completely didn't think of that until right now, and that is a really great point. That's so weird. Why didn't they have music when they came out?
I don't know. Just thinking about it right now, it probably has to do with kind of making it feel more
serious.
Yes, exactly. So, but yeah, just it's just weird that they didn't come out with music.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you.
I guess they both have happy songs, so it wouldn't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, I mean, it was a good promo spot from Bryan Danielson, a.k.a. Daniel Bryan.
D-Bry. Sweet Beats.
I've been talking about Ring of Honor too much in with you right now. That's why I said Bryan Danielson. So the next match on the card was Baron Corbin defeating Ty Dillinger with AJ Styles in commentary. Baron Corbin won with a cheap shot and then did the end of the days. It was a good match. Once again, Baron Corbin is improving in the ring. I enjoy Baron Corbin.
I've always liked Baron Corbin, even back to his NXT days when he was squashing everybody and
yeah.
The crowd was counting his matches and they're always like 13 seconds long and I've always enjoyed Baron Corbin, and the End of Days is a really good move, and Deep Six is a good move, and I think he's improving as well. I think that he's going to have to work his way back up to what they where they held him in their minds before, and they're going to give him that push to maybe win the title by the end of the year, but he's going to have to work at it again.
And then, of course, right after Baron Corbin got the cheap win, we cut right to the backstage with AJ going to Ty Dillinger saying that the U.S. Open Challenge was only open to one person next week. And it was only open to the perfect 10.
Yeah, I kind of think that somehow they're going to get around this because it's the U.S. Open Challenge and someone's going to come out before him. I don't know if it'll be Baron Corbin because it could be Baron Corbin because it's kind of like a mini pay-per-view SmackDown next week.
Yeah, pretty much. There's already three title or that's one of the three title matches, but
so I don't know. I think somehow Ty Dillinger isn't going to get his match.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, Baron Corbin could take him out in the backstage or something like that.
But if he does get his match, hopefully no one gets involved. It's a clean match because this could be the match that the Ty Dillinger shows that he can go with AJ Styles. Maybe. Like, get a push and maybe challenge legitimately for the U.S. title sometime in the future.
No, definitely. This could be the match. I mean, Ty Dillinger is clearly already very over with the crowd, but it could get him even farther over with us smarks and everything like that.
Oh, and backstage, too. Yeah. So,
100%. So, we actually, right after that vignette, we had another backstage segment with Carmella and James Ellsworth, where Carmella kissed the Chinless Wonder. And then smacked him.
Yeah, James Ellsworth came up to her, begging her to take him back, and he won't talk anymore, and he'll listen to her and do whatever she says. And she says, "Now we're gonna do it my way." And then she just lays a big smooch on him, and then smacks him right across the face. So I'm very confused about this.
I think she's very confused as well in kayfabe terms.
So I mean. I'm thinking they're back together, but I thought it was kind of sudden that they just broke up like that.
I just don't really understand. Like, it's really weird, of course. Like, I know we have to suspend disbelief and everything to watch wrestling, and I always do. But we all know that James Ellsworth has, like, a family, like kids and everything. So it makes this whole entire, like, thing weird. I really enjoy them together. I liked it better before the kiss, though.
Yeah, I don't know where they're going with this. I don't know.
Yeah, I just don't understand where it's going.
I'm very interested, though, to see what happens next.
I mean, they do have me hooked. It's kind of, this is the most soap opera-y thing that's going on in the WWE right now, and I'm hooked.
No, the whole episode of SmackDown felt like a soap opera, way more than Raw. I felt, this episode, these two episodes were so different than each other. It's so weird, but I like it. I like that they're different. Besides the fact they both have Corey Graves now.
Yeah.
That's another story.
That's a story for a different day.
So
so after the James Ellsworth and Carmella stuff, we did get to the main event, which was Shinsuke Nakamura going against Randy Orton for number one contendership. And Shinsuke Nakamura went over. And I'm going to tell you, I actually think this might be Shinsuke's best match he's had on the entire main roster.
It was a good match. He won clean.
He went clean. I mean, the Kinshasa reversal into the Randy Orton power slam. He also did the 3.0 backbreaker. You don't know that that's what it's called when he does the arm and then he just drops down to his knees. It's called a 3.0 backbreaker.
Yeah.
He hasn't done that in forever. I don't remember the last time he did that.
It was a solid match. You know what I really liked?
What?
That Jinder and the Singh brothers were up in a private box watching the match instead of backstage watching it in front of a sideways TV.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. I really do enjoy – I don't enjoy everything about how Jinder's been portrayed as champion, but I really like Jinder Mahal as champion. I'm not going to lie to anyone.
Yeah, it's not his fault that I don't like him as champion. I'll admit that. It's definitely the way he's being booked. And I don't know. I mean, I can agree with – I like the guy. I just don't like the way he's being booked, so I don't feel he should be champion. That's just me.
Yeah, I understand completely on that. But as we said, it was a great match. Shinsuke went over, so he's once again going to be facing Jinder Mahal for the championship.
And then you think that would have been good enough just to end SmackDown right there.
Nope.
But it wasn't.
It was not good enough to end SmackDown, because after that, we got one more segment with Daniel Bryan going up to Kevin Owens and asking him, going, hey, Shane McMahon's been, you know, indefinitely suspended. You know, you definitely shouldn't sue. And Kevin Owens goes, nah, brah.
Kevin Owens show next week.
Kevin Owens show. I run this place now. And I hope to God he does.
And then, well, and Daniel Bryan responds, well, I can't remember what Zayla says, but next week, Mr. McMahon's going to be here.
And yep, someone's going to be here to address the situation. And he goes, oh, who? His sister? Triple H? And he goes, no, Mr. McMahon will be here.
And I am so excited for that.
Oh, SmackDown definitely has piqued my interest, and I'm so jacked for this next SmackDown. I mean,
that's a good cliffhanger for sure.
Oh, it was amazing. I honestly am so jacked for next week's SmackDown.
So what do you think was better, Raw or SmackDown?
Oh, that's a really good question. Thinking back on both of them after talking about it, I'm going to go with SmackDown.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with SmackDown because I enjoyed that main event more than I enjoyed the cage match. 100%. That Shinsuke and Randy Orton match, I honestly do believe was his best match on the main roster.
I'm going to go with Raw, actually. And I mean, they're both really, really good shows. I'd probably give them both 4 out of 5 stars. But I think I liked the cage match a little more. And I think there was better wrestling overall on Raw than there was on SmackDown. There's more matches. I don't know. I just thought Raw was just a little bit better.
And so we did review both Raw and SmackDown, and we got some time left. So we're going to squeeze both 205 Live in and NXT into this next little check or segment of our lives. We're going to start with 205 Live because that happens first, technically, sequentially. Even though NXT is taped. But so the 205 Live started with the TJP versus Arya Daivari match. And this was all predicated on TJP coming back from his knee injury. You didn't see me do the air quotes because you can't see me, but I did air quotes.
He did. I saw it.
He saw it. So it was all him coming back. Rich Swann was out on commentary. And by commentary, I mean he just sat on the announce table.
Which I thought was pretty funny.
It was hilarious.
Nigel's first match on 205 Live, and yeah, it's Rich Swann.
Just sitting on the announce table in front of him. It was a really good match. As I always say, 205 Live, every match on 205 Live is always a great match.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely better than the ones they do on Raw because they give them time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's a little bit of a different style, but it's still WWE style. I don't know why people aren't watching.
I do not understand why people aren't watching.
But, I mean, the stories on the show are great. Even, like, this one with TJP and Rich Swann, how they talk about them being friends. And they bring up how TJP eliminated Rich Swann from the Cruiserweight Classic last summer.
Yeah, no. It's continuity. They said they've been friends. And Rich Swann's been like, I don't think you're a real friend. And they're going to have their final match because they're 1-1 right now.
Yep. Next Tuesday after the Mae Young Classic Finals, they have to go on an hour later. So I feel sorry for those fans, kind of, because it's going to be a late one. But it is in Las Vegas, so West Coast time.
Oh, I was going to say, and I don't feel bad for them at all, because they get to watch wrestling for, like, 6 hours.
Well, I mean, not the people that are there. I feel bad more for the people that want to watch it live and maybe I have to wait till like 11 o'clock to see 205 live.
Yep, that's 100% true. All right, I retract my former statement.
I understand. Yeah, I kind of made it sound like the people there. But
I understand. No, you completely were right. And so we'll just move on to the next match, which was Akira Tozawa versus Drew Gulak. And Akira Tozawa won. And it was a great match. I really actually enjoyed this match a lot.
I like Drew Gulak a lot. I didn't think I was going to after the Cruiserweight Classic.
And once he has shaved his beard, he looks like a senator. And I love his gimmick. The no-fly zone, just feet on the ground, safe and sound. I love everything about it.
I loved that he came out there doing a PowerPoint presentation.
Yes, it was great. The most exciting thing he can do.
277 slides.
A PowerPoint presentation. It was amazing. I love his whole character on 205 Live.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with when Enzo calls him Captain Underpants. I know he doesn't look like him, but he looks like someone that would be called Captain Underpants.
He 100% looks like someone who would be called Captain Underpants. So then we had a little few briefs, backstage segments, I'm pretty sure at this point.
I don't recall. I remember the matches.
I don't remember anything that happens between this. I know they had this great match. And then we go to the main event of the show, which was the Fatal 5-Way Elimination Match between Enzo Amore, Cedric Alexander, Grand Metalik, Tony Nese, and the Brian Kendrick. The man with a plan. And Enzo went over, and I've talked to Diesel about this a bunch. I was really, really sick of Enzo Amore on Raw, but he started to win me over again on 205 Live.
Yeah, I like this cheating to win face character he's got going. And whenever he does that little dance, whenever he does, it makes me laugh every time still. It just looks funny.
It's hilarious. I also love that all four of the other competitors teamed up against him and were just wrecking his world. And Cedric Alexander beat three of the opponents with the lumbar check. He's the one who got all of the other pins besides the final pin.
Yep, after he eliminated Grand Metalik, Enzo rolled him up, grabbed the tights. He got a half moon, and Enzo was the winner.
Yeah, no, and maybe he's the man with the plan at this point on 205 Live.
I don't know, but I do think that the match, because this was number one contender match for No Mercy for the Cruiserweight title with Neville, I think that it's actually going to be an entertaining match because Neville's going to get super frustrated. I just really hope he doesn't cheat to win and they put the title on Enzo.
I swear to God, if they put the title on Enzo, I was okay with Tozawa taking the title from Neville. If Enzo takes the gosh darn title, I will lose my mind.
No, I promise you, everybody will turn on Enzo. I mean, it just doesn't feel right.
I tweeted about it. Did you? You saw my tweet about what the title would look like. They're selling them on WWE Shop right now. Leopard print with the Cruiserweight things on it? No, no.
But, I mean, I do got to say a lot of people are complaining about how he just got into the division and he's already at the top of the card. But, I mean, think about it. The way they portray 205 Live to the rest of the roster is it's a step below Raw and SmackDown. So, technically, he basically got sent down to the minor leagues. So, he should be at the top of the card.
Yeah, no, and he's even addressed that in his promos that he's had on 205 Live. So, I'm totally okay with it. I have no problems with him being at the top of the card. So that was 205 Live. Once again, a fantastic show that everyone needs to be watching. If you aren't, what the heck are you doing with your life? I am serious with you. Watch 205 Live. But we'll move on to NXT, which everyone does watch because it's also amazing. And we are now in the next golden age of the NXT division.
It's probably better than it ever was.
Oh, yeah. This we could probably call this the Platinum Age because there's so much talent on this roster. It's sickening.
And it's only getting better. They just signed Donovan Dijak.
Yes.
And Ricochet is free from all obligations at the beginning of the year. And I can almost promise you he's coming to the WWE.
He lives two blocks away from the Performance Center in Florida.
And his girlfriend has worked with WWE on multiple occasions. And his best friend or his roommate, Apollo Crews, is on Raw. I mean, yeah. It all makes perfect sense.
And I really actually kind of hope Ricochet goes to 205 Live because Ricochet to 205 Live would make 205 Live become something amazing.
See, a couple months ago, I would have disagreed with you on that. But right now, like I just got on saying, it's kind of a step below Raw and SmackDown. It would be nice to have someone that a lot of people would know as in Ricochet and know what he's done, winning the Best of the Super Juniors in New Japan, winning his second BOA this past weekend.
Yeah, congratulations as well. First time ever, two-time winner of the Battle of Los Angeles at PWG.
And it would definitely up the top of the card. I mean, Neville versus
Ricochet. Like, I just am frothing at the mouth just even thinking about those matches.
The only worry I have is that he's going to get lost in the 205 Live like spectrum, and he's going to get overlooked, and eventually he's going to get upset, and he's just going to go back to the indies because he shines on the indies, and I really hope that doesn't happen because I think he could be eventually WWE champion material.
Yeah, no, 100%. I love Ricochet. But now we do need to move on to NXT. So the first match on the card for NXT was Andrade Cien Almas defeating Cesar Bononi. That was his one loss that he had a little bit ago when he was just totally carefree. It's his most embarrassing loss he had on the NXT roster, and he just destroyed this kid.
I don't know. I don't know. I liked the match and everything, but I was kind of distracted in a good way by Zelina's commentary.
Zelina Vega's commentary. Yeah. She was great on commentary.
I mean, I was watching the match, but it was still kind of distracting to me because I was paying attention to what she was saying and how she was arguing with all three of the guys. I thought it was funny that she didn't agree with any of them.
Yep. Nope.
Even Nigel.
No, she was awesome. But I really enjoyed her on commentary.
The match was good, and then she called it when he was going to go for the win. She told him when to go for his finisher.
Yep.
And I like Andrade Cien Almas. I liked him when he first came up, and he kind of got stale as a face. And I told you when he became a heel, I'm like, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
And it has been.
No, and I did not like him when he came up as a face. I thought his matches were okay. And he has won me over completely, and he's one of my favorite guys on NXT right now.
I like his song, too.
Oh, yeah. And especially with Zelina Vega, it's amazing. I love everything, and I just want him to bring Los Ignorables to NXT. And I think if they're going to do this Ring of Honor faction, he might do it because he's going to need a warring faction to go against that.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That would be cool. So awesome.
What do you have next?
The next match on the card was Lars Sullivan, the resident badass of NXT, defeating Jake James, Alfred Watkins, and Ricky Martinez in a 3-on-1 handicap match. And it wasn't even close.
Yeah, they're kind of going with the Braun Strowman route on this one.
Yeah, they are. He is just crushing people.
We were talking a little bit ago. We didn't know what they were going to do with him, and kind of came up with the idea maybe he was going to go for the tag team titles and get some partner that he finally were good with. And then Chad said, there's no way. He can't work with anybody. I'm like, well, maybe he'll go for him by himself and he'll win him by himself.
And that would be the best storyline for him. That would be so amazing if he won the NXT tag titles by himself.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I mean, hopefully it wouldn't be against Sanity. Hopefully someone would take him off Sanity.
Yeah, it couldn't be against Sanity. It would have to be against like TM61.
That's what
something.
I was thinking too. They should be coming back soon, hopefully.
Oh, they should. They're healed at this point, I'm pretty sure. So they should be coming back within the next tapings or two.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited for that. I like them.
Oh, yeah. 100%. So the next match on the card was Sonya Deville defeating Zeta, which was, once again, they're really building Sonya as like just a badass. She's kind of like the Brock Lesnar lady version.
I like her, and I hope that somehow this leads eventually down the line, I don't know how long, but leads to like a Shayna Baszler match.
Oh.
I mean, I like Shayna Baszler stuff from the Mae Young Classic, and they kind of got MMA background style. I mean, they could build it up as like a big time, like legit fight if they wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, Sonya's been defeating people in like UFC style times. Like, she's been beating everyone in under 3 minutes.
And I like her. I like the way she carries herself. Like, you can tell that she just like
she gets it.
She's just exuding her confidence, you know. And
no, I completely agree with you. I like everything about her style of matches. I think she's improving slowly. I don't think she's improving as fast as I thought she would.
I think this is part of like the story, though, because like, the people they've been putting her up against are nobodies yet, you know. So I think they're just trying to get you used to her.
Yeah.
And eventually, by I bet you by the Survivor Series takeover, she might have a match. I don't know. Maybe not. But
you never know. No, because I do enjoy her as well. So she won, and then next we had. It was the main event match of the evening. There's another event after this, which was superseded this. But we'll talk about this one first, which was Cassius Ohno and Hideo Itami in a no DQ match. And I thought this match was good, but I was a little disappointed with it. I thought it would be better.
I thought it was pretty good. I didn't have any problems with it. I wasn't disappointed in any way, but I mean, I thought the last match was better when...
It was like at least five times better than the last match. Their last match was five times better than this match. I apologize.
I mean, I did like that it was no DQ, so there was a couple cool chair shots, like when he went for the rolling elbow and Tommy put the chair up.
Yeah.
And then so he was selling the elbow pretty much the whole match until the end when he became invincible.
Yep, and then also like the dropkick spot where Hideo Itami dropkicked the chair into his face. That was another good one.
I liked the kick to the nuts, basically.
Yeah.
I liked the way Tommy sold it, like his face. Like it looked like that's how it would be if you got kicked there. And I mean... I didn't have a problem with the match. I thought it was a good match. And I think they're kind of maybe not trying to make it as good as possible because
it's 50-50 booking.
And also what was to come later, they kind of knew that.
Yeah. They couldn't supersede what comes next because it was the best part
of
the entire
show. But
then
again, who knows? Maybe they like pieced it together and it didn't even happen around the same time.
Yeah, we really don't know.
So, yeah. So maybe I'm just totally off base here.
You just never know. And I mean, honestly, I do hope this maybe leads to some kind of maybe a cage match at NXT Survivor Series, whatever they're going to call that one, or NXT TakeOver.
Houston.
Yeah. That's where they are. Okay, so Houston TakeOver. Maybe they do like a cage match. I hope not, because I really don't like cage matches. I hope they do some other stipulation, though, because they are 1-1 against each other.
Yeah, I don't know what they would do, though. Maybe a best 2 out of 3 falls.
Oh, three stages of hell. Three stages of hell. I want a three stages of hell.
They won't do that at NXT, but yes, I want it. I want one of those matches. I just don't think they do it at NXT.
All right, though. So we're going to move on, though, to the best part of the entire show, which is also a little sad, which was Asuka relinquishing her NXT Women's Championship. The entire promo, everyone was down there, Triple H, William Regal, Ember Moon. It was just flat out amazing. I don't know what else to say.
Basically, what we were talking about earlier, I said, okay, they had the rest of the show and they got to this point and they basically were like, okay, we're getting real now. Like, we're going, these are the real people. We're actually honoring the person who is Asuka, not the character who is Asuka, which I really liked. I really liked that they gave her the mic and let her say goodbye to the NXT universe. And I really liked how she said that NXT
was
always
go with her forever. It was amazing. It was all
really like that. I like she. I don't know. You saw a different side of Asuka because you always see the pretty much heel or the fight mentality Asuka. We got to see someone. She was dancing around in the ring when they were chanting "Thank you, Asuka." She was like I don't know. I can't see me, but
yeah.
Like going back and
amazing.
Forth, side to side, and yeah. Then everyone came out on the top of the stage. Ember Moon came out last, walked down to the ring, and went for the handshake. Pulled her hand back and gave her a big hug.
The hug between Ember Moon and Asuka was one of my favorite parts of the entire thing. It was so heartfelt, and it literally was a passing of the torch. That was the perfect passing of the torch right there. It was Asuka saying, "This is your place now. Thank you so much for the matches you gave me."
And then Triple H came down to the ring with flowers like they do. I like that they do that in NXT. They even did it for Finn Balor, they gave him flowers.
Yep.
And I like that he came down. And I like that he got on the mic and said some kind words about her. And then That's pretty much it.
Like, he raised her arm.
Yeah, he raised her bad arm, which is kind of. and then he put the belt in that arm. So like, oh.
Yeah, it was a little nice by Triple H.
But I don't know. Maybe it's not as bad as you think. Maybe it's just a fracture. I don't know.
As I said, I thought this injury was kayfabe the entire time.
But from what they're saying, it's really not.
Yeah, I hear what they're saying, but I disagree.
I think Bayley's is kayfabe too, then.
And so that was 205 Live. And
that was NXT. Okay. I see what you're doing now. I thought, okay.
Lock it up over there, Professor Diesel.
Hey, you lost the Gold Star from a couple weeks ago. I didn't give you any tonight.
That's very mean. No, at some point in the night, I heard you say gold stars all around.
I did, but it was kind of while you were talking, so I was hoping you didn't hear that.
Oh, I heard it. I always hear about the gold stars. But
you got that one taken away.
No, it's still there. The final thoughts of the night. You got any for me, Diesel?
I actually have one.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about this in the opening, and I forgot, so I might as well bring it up now. This past week, one of my favorite shows started back up. Season 2 of Total Bellas.
Oh, gross.
It's not gross. It's awesome. It's wrestling. It's Daniel Bryan, John Cena. I like it. But anyways, I was watching it before I came over, and I got like 11 minutes in. And I was watching it on Hulu, and for the first time ever, my Hulu's never done this to me before. They asked me, would you like to watch another video? So even my Hulu's embarrassed that I'm watching this. So I mean, I didn't watch another video. I finished it, and I enjoyed it too. So if anyone wants to talk some Total Bellas or Total Divas, I'm right here. You know where to find me. If you don't, it's at Diesel_BFTR on Twitter.
Yeah, that's exactly where to find the Diesel. I don't really have many final thoughts. I lost my XWA match, which is very sad for the Lord of the Ring finals. Very upset because only one person voted. I'm very, very upset about this. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I'm just very upset about this. But for Diesel. Oh, wait. No. Once again, I always skip doing the social media stuff. Diesel, can you hit us up with our social media stuff?
Yeah, as I said, you can find me at Diesel_BFTR on Twitter. Chad runs the show account at View From Top Rope on Twitter. Then we have our Facebook, which is View From The Top Rope. Tumblr, which is View From The Top Rope. Then we're on Gmail, which is ofyoufromtoprope@gmail.com. And you can listen to us on SoundCloud. Listen to us on Stitcher. You can listen to us on iTunes.
Good God, Diesel, you are the best. You just nailed every single one of those.
I know. I've practiced a bunch in my head.
Good job, my good man. But for my good man, Diesel, I have been Chad. And we thank you for climbing up high with us. And we hope that you have enjoyed our view from the top rope.